Hey, and welcome to the Tipsy Archives. I'm your host, Rachel Liggy. This is the first episode of a two-part series on polar exploration, recorded by Aaron Redekop and Adam Hancock. In this first episode, they discuss the expeditions of John Franklin and Charles Francis Hall. So take a tip from the sailors, pour yourself something strong, try and keep warm, and enjoy the first half of this two-part series on polar exploration.
All right, well, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me. Pleasure to be here. Cheers.
So today, Adam and I are drinking Dirty Laundry, A Girl in Every Port. It's from up in Kelowna. The Dirty Laundry Winery is up there, and it's actually got a fantastic little scandalous story that I may talk about sometime in the future. But for today, Adam and I are going to talk about polar exploration, specifically in the North Pole. And we're going to start with Franklin, right?
Yeah, he's kind of an interesting character, especially for Canadians, and kind of been in the news a bit lately, so...
Yeah, because they discovered one of his ships recently,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, well, we're kind of getting ahead of ourselves now,
I think. No, okay, we'll go back to the beginning, then.
Maybe they don't know, so all right, back to the beginning. The world's a giant ball of magma. Eventually, it hardens.
There were dinosaurs.
Yeah, lots of really cool dinosaurs. We could just make this the dinosaur episode if you want.
I don't think we should talk about dinosaurs for the whole podcast.
You know, I hear they're birds.
Well, they might be birds.
Bring everyone up on dinosaurs to the level of 1994's thinking.
Well, maybe we'll do a future podcast on dinosaurs. Okay, so first expedition that we are going to talk about, most of these are going to be kind of harebrained schemes, is the Franklin Expedition. And what interests you about the Franklin Expedition?
So, the Franklin Expedition, it was one of the final expeditions where people wanted to finally find their way through the Northwest Passage. And the Northwest Passage, if you're Canadian anyway, is something you will have learned a lot about in school. But they'll never really tell you what it was. They always talk about it as though it's a... you go in one end of a tunnel and you pop out another end of the tunnel and congratulations, you've been in the Northwest Passage.
I always thought it was sort of like the Polar Express.
Yeah, exactly. But the reality is it's a lot more complex. Like, if you take a look at a map of Northern Canada, it's just a giant maze. And the idea of the Northwest Passage is at some point in the summer, parts of that giant maze will not be frozen, thus having a convenient way to get to what they would have dubbed at the time the riches of the Orient.
So they really wanted this for, like, a trading route,
Absolutely. But the problem is to get from China or, let's say, Malaysia, where there would have been lots of investment, or India, you would have to sail a ship all the way down around the Cape of Good Hope, I believe, in South Africa. And that took quite a bit of time. Or you would have to truck it by land all the way across, and that's a long way, and it's kind of hot and miserable there a lot of the time. I'm not sure if you've ever looked at, like, a weather forecast for Pakistan or Iran or even, heaven forbid, Central Siberia. It's not very nice there a lot of the time. So Britain, of course, being a naval power, and since they destroyed the Spanish Armada and the Dutch Armadas, basically the strongest naval power there was in the world. So they had great interest in finding a way through the Northwest Passage.
That makes sense. Although, it seems kind of weird that they're like, I don't want to go into the south because it's kind of miserable, but I want to go really far north and it's not going to be as miserable.
Well, I don't think they were concerned about how miserable it was going south.
Yeah.
It's just a very, very long way.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. You are essentially going completely out of your way.
Exactly, because London, the city, is at about 50 degrees north latitude.
Yeah.
It's a thing that I did not realize for the longest time how far north it was.
It's nearly as north as Edmonton, which gets mentioned a lot on this podcast.
All right, then. There we go. I would have thought it was farther north than Edmonton.
It's not quite. Okay. Dublin is the exact same as Edmonton, though.
There we go.
Random facts.
There we have it. Certain parallels, I suppose. You've got Temple Bar in one, you've got White Ave in the other.
Yeah, they're totally equal.
You've got, what else? You've got the nice little parliamentary district over there, and you've got the Ice District.
Yeah. I would also go with, They have, like, you know, all of their theater scene, and Edmonton has its really good underground theater scene. So, see, there are.
There we go. Although it doesn't have quite the Fringe Festival that would be Edinburgh, which is considerably farther north even from there.
That is true, although Edmonton's is the second best in the world.
So I'm told.
By me, or by the internet?
By a number of people. Chiefly among them, you.
Fair. I love the Fringe Festival in Edmonton. Okay, but that's getting really off topic.
We are veering wildly side
to side. Wildly off. Okay, so we should actually talk about Franklin.
Yeah, so Franklin was at the time, so this was around 1845. He would have been a rear admiral in the British Navy, so he was he was well-respected. He had served as the lieutenant governor of what was then known as Van Diemen's Land. It was a very cool-sounding name, but it is now known as Tasmania. Also a cool-sounding name, so they kind of went from a thumbs-up to a thumbs-up there. And he had previously explored in the Arctic. He had a long history of serving on very interesting-sounding ships. So he'd served on things called, like, the Polyphemus, the Investigator, the HMS Bellerophon, all very excellent, powerful, and mysterious ship-sounding names. And so he was ultimately chosen to be the person who led this expedition.
But he wasn't the first choice.
He was not the first choice. The first choice was a man named, I believe it was Ross, who is well known for, or possibly even Perry. Mm-hmm. And they were other British explorers who had explored quite a bit in the North and in the South Polar regions. But both of them declined because they said they were sick of the Arctic.
Which is legit. I've never been to, like, the full Arctic, but I've been pretty far north, and I wouldn't want to go there again.
Yeah, I mean, you're from Edmonton, so I feel it's very easy for you to imagine what it's like if it's minus 40, and then imagine that over 55 days at a time.
Yeah, whereas I'm just remembering this one time having to walk to the bus, and it being, like, crazy amounts of snow, and minus 40 and my eyelashes sticking to me, but I can't imagine if I didn't have, like, a warm house at the end of it.
Exactly. You would have had a boat and some whale oil lamps, and it would never, ever, ever get light out.
Although, at least, I wouldn't have been 9, so I would have been able to, like, go and drink a lot and hopefully forget about it.
That's true. Although, you know, drinking a lot on polar expeditions does come with its risks, as we'll find out.
We will talk about that later. So, Franklin's done previous expeditions, so he's not, like, a junior person to this, or, like, a complete newbie.
No, you can definitely argue he's not a complete newbie, and he's certainly not a junior person. In fact, he's about 59 when he embarks on this expedition in, was it 1845?
Yes.
So, you know, that's, I would say that's fairly old to have someone leading an expedition to parts unknown now. And, you know, almost certainly then as well.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I would not want to send many 59-year-olds that I know to go and explore the Arctic on their own.
No.
Well, not on their own, but you know what I mean.
I feel it'd be a good deal safer now, but...
But it would still be cold. I did an Alaskan cruise, and it still got cold. And that was a cruise.
So Franklin got 2 ships, and he filled them up with men and a lot of supplies, and he said, all right, let's go and let's find the last key to the Northwest Passage. And many before him, like Frobisher and Baffin, had already discovered entrances to it.
Right.
But he wanted to get the whole way and pop out in Alaska.
That sounds like a good plan.
Yeah, I mean, if it all worked out, that would have been fantastic.
But I feel like, so he named his ships have really crazy names.
They have names, yes.
They have names. I feel like, so his ship's names are the HMS Erebus and the HMS Terror.
Yes.
So, I feel like those are probably bad omens in and of themselves.
Terror is fairly self-explanatory.
Yeah.
And if you're not up on your ancient Greek mythology, Erebus was the name of the dark hell. So, within Hades, there are a number of hells. Mm-hmm. And Erebus was specifically the Dark Hell. You've got Terror, you've got Dark Hell.
Well, and Erebus is also the son of Chaos, too. And
there we have it.
Yeah. So there's a lot of crazy names there.
Yeah, so I can't help but think of the people that would be signing up for this expedition. You know, let's go out there, let's go get on the Terror, let's go sail the Hell all the way across the ocean into parts unknown in the frozen wastes.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like a good idea to me.
No, but you imagine that these people must have had their reasons to go.
Well, I mean, it's exciting.
It's certainly exciting. I imagine if you made it back, you would be feted a hero.
Yeah.
You know, you were on that expedition.
I guess it's a little bit similar to, like, our explorations to space today, where it's a complete unknown, and I would go to space.
I disagree.
Yeah.
I would not go to space.
Really?
Well, not right now. I mean, you're basically strapping yourself onto a gigantic on an enormous bomb, and firing yourself into space.
There haven't been any major explosions since I was 21, I guess.
Is that when Columbia blew up?
I was in my 20s, I think, or maybe like my late teens when Columbia blew up. I can't remember exactly how old I was, but it was a while ago.
It's still very, very early ages of that. Space is even more hostile than the Arctic, as far as I can understand.
But you don't normally go out in it. You just, like, stay in your little spaceship.
Exactly. And I feel a lot of the time it's the same in the Arctic boats.
Yeah, and I guess the difference is, like, in the Arctic you have a slight chance of survival if everything goes haywire. In space you don't really have any chance of survival.
Yeah, and this kind of takes us interesting to our the next part of the story. So they get in their boats, they get in the Terror, they get in the Erebus.
Yeah.
And they sail across into the Northwest Passage.
Yeah.
Because we exist, we know it exists.
Mm-hmm.
Does it have an end to it? So they sail their way through in between some islands, and eventually what happens is what tends to happen a lot, and this will kind of be a recurring theme.
Mm-hmm.
They get stuck in the ice.
Shocking.
Shocking. Who could have possibly imagined?
Yeah.
But they've brought along a lot of food.
Yeah, they have like 5 years of fare.
Yeah, so they've brought along 5 years of food because they adopted what was a very, very British, I feel, very British mindset to this. And that they thought, we're British, we've conquered the world, our way to do this is going to be best. So they took what they had, what they knew. They knew people lived there. They knew there were natives living in the northerly regions. I believe it's the Thule people is the sort of the catch-all name for everyone living far from the north. They would have called them Eskimos. We call them Inuit.
Mm-hmm.
I believe they call themselves Inuit. But they decide, you know what? Forget about them. We'll bring all of our stuff. And how does that end up?
Well, it doesn't seem to end up very well for them.
No, they are trapped in the ice for quite a long period of time.
Yep, they are. Well, before they get trapped in the ice, though, they do actually stay on one island. There's an island that they stay that they have, like, three sailors die on that island.
Oh.
Two. Yeah, and 'cause that becomes important later.
Oh, all right. I'm excited to learn something here myself.
They do spend some time on Beachy Island.
Okay.
Which sounds a lot nicer than it probably is.
It really sounds lovely.
I know. It makes me want to go there, but I don't think it was that nice.
And so what happened on Beachy Island?
While they're on Beachy Island, I think it's three sailors get sick and die.
Hmm. And this will become important later?
It does. It becomes very important later because of the way the permafrost works. The bodies are perfectly preserved, essentially.
Yeah, that would make a lot of sense. Like, it'd be very easy to preserve any body you found up there. So I imagine anyone doing any sort of autopsies after the fact will figure this stuff out.
Exactly. And so then they're much more able to determine cause of death.
Okay. That's very convenient for us amateur historians after the fact to find this stuff out.
Exactly.
So, yeah, and then after the winter in Beachy Island, that was 1845, 1846, the last time any Europeans saw the Franklin Expedition would have been in 1845, and then by September 1846, they've been trapped in the ice.
Yeah. And the ships are destroyed when they're trapped in the ice?
Well, they never sailed again. They weren't destroyed immediately. Usually what happens in this case is the ship gets encased by ice. Ice starts catching on to, like, the edges and the corners, and eventually the stresses just crush the ship, because you have essentially oceans of ice,
right,
pushing up and forth, and their currents don't really care about these ships. So the men of the expedition are forced to disembark and seek other sorts of shelter.
That makes sense. And nobody at this point has any idea what's happened to them, or even necessarily that anything's wrong, because they're supposed to be gone for a good chunk of time.
Exactly. These expeditions regularly take, you know, 2 or 3 years.
Well, hence why they had 5 years of food.
There we go. So it's also at this point that the actual information that we have gets a little bit squirrely, because we don't have a lot of diaries or anything from them at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
There were a few cairns found around in and around King William Island, where it would just say they would have messages, and there'd be messages from members of the crew saying what's going on. So there was one dated, I believe, 1847, and I believe it's in late May. And the message was simply, "All well, Franklin in charge." Or Franklin in command, I believe. So, sounds like it's going pretty good.
Everything's going great.
Successfully wintered.
Yeah.
That's good. I mean, we know it's possible. The Inuit people have lived there. They've successfully wintered. So, there's also a second note, and it's found in the exact same cairn, because this cairn was relatively near where the Erebus and Terror were wintering.
Okay.
So the first note, the Erebus and Terror happily wintering, all well, Franklin in command.
Mm-hmm.
So this would have been late May 1848.
Okay.
Second note, very ominous, very,
mm-hmm.
very ominous. It's scrawled in the margins of the first note,
mm-hmm.
and it comes from late April in 1848, so after the next winter.
Uh-huh.
And it says that Franklin's dead.
Uh-huh.
He died just 2 weeks after the first note said, "All well."
Uh-huh.
It's very Homer Simpson in that episode with the Shining parody, The Shining, where she looks at his typewriter seat and she says, "Feeling fine." It's basically the equivalent of that.
I see.
But 2 weeks later, Franklin's dead. 24 other members of the crew have died that winter. The Erebus and Terror have broken up. They've finally been pulverized by the pack ice.
Okay.
And the remaining members of the Franklin expedition are basically saying, "We're out of here."
Okay, so something pretty catastrophic has probably happened. Then,
yeah.
If that many people have died and Franklin died within a 2-week period, it's not like he just expired.
Well, he was fairly old, and he was fairly far north and in the Arctic.
That is true.
So, I'm not sure, have you encountered any suspicions of foul play on this?
Not yet.
Yeah, I feel that something fairly catastrophic that have happened to them is probably just an Arctic winter.
Yeah.
And the fact that a lot of people aren't prepared to be out there in an Arctic winter.
Yeah. Well, and it's not like they've ever really experienced anything. Like, it gets pretty cold in England, but not that cold.
It's like there's cold and there's cold cold. Although, should be pointed out, England has a wet cold, and it's much worse to be in a wet cold than a dry cold, like in the Arctic regions.
You're pulling the Vancouver-Edmonton thing now, aren't you?
I am.
Jerk.
I do what I can.
I don't actually believe that.
I don't either.
But it's fun to say.
It is really fun to say. So, after this, we don't have a whole lot of word of what happened to the Franklin expedition. There are lots of accounts from the Inuit people up there as well of having encountered what are basically starved, half-crazed, barely even human men.
Yeah, I read a really creepy article about that, that said they would just sort of, like, wander into villages and stuttering and wouldn't be able to respond to anything, and they didn't want to eat anything, and they essentially were like zombies.
Yeah, it's a harrowing thought, and when the British people found out about this, it's kind of a shock.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, everyone expects the good British explorer to meet everything with a stiff upper lip. You know, he's giving the salute as the ship goes down and not bending one bit. You know, the band is playing on as the ship sinks, kind of thing, and not this. What, by all accounts, sounds like a descent into madness and very probably cannibalism.
Well, because they found a lot of the bodies, and they had obviously been cannibalized, and there was, like, knife marks into the bone, and
yeah.
The skeletons were, like, raw and bare, and it's a pretty scary, scary idea.
It's a very, very, very grim specter. And there's been some pretty cool art on the subject. I've listened to quite a few episodes and enjoy talking about art. There's a very nice piece of art that was included, in fact, in one of the articles that you sent me called Man Proposes, God Disposes. And
but that's not with the polar bear.
It's the one with the polar bears ripping their way through the remains of a giant crushed up ship that was definitely inspired by this expedition.
I will make sure that I post that article and the piece of art on our Twitter and on our Facebook.
So that, in a nutshell, is the Franklin Expedition.
But there's some theories about what happened.
There are some theories.
To them. So earlier I talked about how there were the three men on Beachy Island that they found later on. And so they were able to, because they're perfectly preserved, they're able to actually perform autopsies on them. And they discovered that there was a high level of lead in their bodies. And
so why would there be a high level of lead in their bodies? Are they eating shot? Like,
okay, so there's a couple of ideas
these,
for that.
These people died before the ships were encased in ice.
Exactly. And so they think that there's two ideas. One is that the canning process for the Franklin Expedition could have been faulty, because they needed a large amount of food really quickly, and so they think it might have been rushed. And so they used much larger containers than they normally did. And then they found that the soldering around the edges of the cans had a lot of lead in it and was really sloppy, and so it could have seeped into the food. So it's entirely possible that the men were eating contaminated food.
Which would explain the lead poisoning.
Exactly. But they're not 100% convinced about that, because the company that had done the food for the Franklin Expedition had done a number of previous expeditions and had no problems with any of them.
Right.
Nobody had ever seen lead poisoning. But because this one was so quick, it's entirely possible that it just could have been a different story. The other theory on it is that the ship had been outfitted with a system to take the salty water and distill it into water that they could actually drink. And the pipes on there were incredibly new, but they were lead pipes, because that's what all pipes are made of at that time. And they were all soldered together with lead. And apparently when water is really warm and in those pipes, especially if they haven't been used very often, the lead can get into the water.
And then you end up drinking lead. Then you have Flint, Michigan on a boat.
Exactly. And so it's entirely possible that they're driven mad by lead poisoning.
Right.
That's part of why, their mental facilities may not have been as good. It could have been part of the reason why they crashed, or not crashed, but, got stuck in ice.
Yeah, and why they, very strong indicator why they might have descended into cannibalism rather quickly.
Exactly, and why they didn't die the British death that everybody seemed to want them to.
Well.
Not wanting, you know what I mean.
I do. So, yeah, after this, I mean, 2 years go by, no one's worried about anything. Life goes on in Victorian England. 3 years go by, they're like, oh, any day now, the Franklin Expedition might be coming back. 4, 5, 6 years go by, and people are wondering, where's the Franklin Expedition? And, of course, boats are up there. There's whalers, there's sealers, there's all sorts of things. So there's traffic.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously not enormous amounts of merchant traffic, but there's still traffic. And no one sees anything. No one's heard of anyone who's seen anything.
Yeah.
The best they have is a rough idea of where Franklin was going. So people start mounting expeditions to go finding what is now known and continues to be known as the Lost Franklin Expedition.
Yes.
And there's at least 20 of them between 1850 and 1878. People found various things. They found skeletons. So they found some of the bodies on Beachy Island.
Mm-hmm.
They found the cairns. So they knew roughly that the ships got stuck in the ice. But the weird thing was, they never found the ships. And in fact, it wasn't until 2014 when the Canadian government finally found one of the ships. And it wasn't until about 2 months ago, in September of 2016, now you know when it's being recorded, that they confirmed they had found the final ship, which I believe was the Terror. Was this the last one that they found?
I think so, yeah.
They found it in Terror Bay, which makes you wonder why they didn't check there earlier.
You know, like the terror is going to be found in Terror Bay.
It might have been an after-the-fact naming. I'm not up on my etymology of Terror Bay at the moment, but I've got an inkling, let's say. So, this was, one of the great pursuits of that. So, that will bring us to our next explorer we'll be looking into, and we'll be discussing the expeditions of Charles Francis Hall next. He's much less well-known. And for that, we'll be drinking an IPA from Oregon called, I believe it's called Wanderlust, which fits with the theme nicely, from Breakside Brewing, so.
And it's pretty much the only time you're going to catch me drinking an IPA.
Exactly.
Let's see if I like it. It's not bad.
All right. Thematically appropriate, getting IPA points, counteracting those hops. So, Charles Francis Hall, I find him quite interesting, because he's quite a contrast to John Franklin.
Mm-hmm.
So Sir John Franklin, even now, is fairly well known. There's a place named after him. He was a rear admiral, as we had said before, in the British Navy. And Charles Francis Hall, unless you're quite interested in Arctic exploration, you probably haven't heard of him.
I heard about Hall for the first time about 3 weeks ago when you told me about him.
There you go. So he's a fairly interesting type. Franklin was British. Hall was an American. So he grew up in Vermont. He was an apprentice blacksmith, and he's a character that you tend to see a lot in sort of the 19th century, the 1800s in America, where you'll see people who try and fail at a lot of things and finally settle on something else. So he was an apprentice blacksmith, and eventually he married and moved to Cincinnati. In Cincinnati, he started a newspaper called, was it the Cincinnati Occasional?
Yeah.
That didn't work out, so he set his sights higher and went with the Daily Press.
Sounds very much like something out of Superman.
Exactly. And then after some time, around the age of 36, he began becoming very interested in the Arctic. And when he turned 39, he took it in his head that he would discover the Franklin Expedition, because it still had not been discovered. And this would have been about 1860. Conveniently, around 1860, it's also a pretty good time to get out of America. So, in 1860, Hall gathered up some supplies and found some people who would take him on a boat, and he went in search of the Franklin Expedition. He didn't really find anything. A notable thing about it is that he encountered a lot of the local Inuit people, and he sort of got along with them, and he hired some guides, and he sort of asked their side of the view, and it's from that we get a lot of the understanding of the sort of crazed zombie people that the Franklin Expedition might have come.
So the people that Hall's interacting with had actually encountered Franklin. Not Franklin, but people from the Franklin Expedition.
Or had known people, or at least knew of the stories.
Right.
In the end, he didn't really find anything on the first expedition. And then on the second expedition, this would have been 1863, mm-hmm. The year of the Gettysburg Address. So in case you hadn't figured it out, all of America is in civil war right now.
That's why it's good to get out of America.
Meanwhile, Charles Francis Hall is going, doop-a-doo, I hope people want to pay me to go up and explore the Arctic. And by the way, after his first expedition looking for Franklin, what does he come back believing? That the men are still alive.
Oh.
He thinks they're still alive. He's heard some stories that people have been seeing.
Oh, because there's people wandering
mm-hmm.
in the Arctic.
So he thinks
okay.
they're still there and able to be rescued.
Okay.
So he goes again. Comes back, and he doesn't find anything. And at this point, I think he gives them up for dead. So after that, he comes back. At this point, America's kind of calmed down a bit. The North has won. They begin the era of Reconstruction. And Charles Francis Hall decides that he wants to be the first person to mount an expedition to the North Pole itself. Because at this point, no one has actually gone to the North Pole. All of the efforts have been concentrated first on finding the Northwest Passage.
Okay.
And then after that, the naturally mysterious and romantic grandeur of finding what happened to the lost Franklin Expedition. So he decides he's going to make the first expedition to the North Pole.
Okay. That sounds like a decent idea.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea, but things didn't start off all that great.
Probably because he's not a explorer.
He, it's right. He's not an explorer. He's more or less, he's kind of a dilettante. I mean, he has gone, you know, to Baffin Island or various environs twice, which is more than most people could say in the mid-19th century.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not a Navy man. He's not a captain.
He doesn't really know how to actually, like, sail a ship or command a ship.
I would argue he's got absolutely no idea on how to sail or how to command. So in 1871, regardless, they think that he's the next great hope for Americans reaching the North Pole, and Ulysses S. Grant, who's the president at the time, lets him commission a ship. So in
1871.
So in 1871, Ulysses S. Grant and the Senate decide to give them some funds to send a ship up north.
$50,000 grant, which would have been a lot of money in 1871.
Yeah, and more than that, they even commissioned the ship into the Navy, thus making him, I believe, either a lieutenant or a captain.
I have no idea. I am not up on my, like, naval ranks.
Yeah, me neither. They're complicated.
They are.
So, around in 1871, he gathers up a crew and sets off. So what can you tell me about this crew? Because it's a fairly interesting crew, which will have a profound impact on the story ahead.
Well, so because Hall didn't really know how to sail and knew nothing about commanding a ship, there wind up being three people that are in charge of the ship. Sidney O'Buddington is named the sailing master, and George Tyson is the assistant navigator, and they're all essentially equal in being three captains.
So it really sounds like a too many captains in the kitchen kind of thing.
I feel like it's a really bad idea to have that many, and I feel like they're all strong personalities, which will come out later. Whenever you have three captains in charge of something, it's hard to figure out who's actually in charge, and people have conflicting opinions, especially when you come from three very different backgrounds.
Yeah, so I can imagine that Hull, despite not knowing how to sail, not knowing how to run a ship, not knowing how to command a ship, still very much thinking, this is my expedition. I'm going to send us all, we're all going north, and you will be the one steering the boat, you'll be the one commanding the people, but I run the ship.
Which has got to be really annoying if you're the person who's actually doing the heavy lifting.
Exactly, or any of the people. Most of the crew, it sounds like, was made up of Germans.
Yeah.
So it wasn't even an entirely American crew.
No, despite the fact that, like, the boat and the funds and Hall are American, I don't think many other people were. And so they set off.
Yeah, they set off, and they actually do quite well in the beginning.
They have a bad beginning. Before they even leave the port, the steward is so drunk that he has to be left in the port.
Ha! That's not so bad. That's actually kind of hilarious.
Yeah, but then they have to go and get a new one.
Fair enough. And they found one, though?
Yeah, they did. They found one. But even by the time they reach St. John's, so up in Canada, there's already problems with the crew, and some of the crew want to desert because there's conflict.
So they might even be getting, you know, not sure who we want to follow, and perhaps the crew fractured along the lines of who should we follow.
Yeah, I think who we should follow is probably a big thing there.
So this boat, which is called the Polaris, this is the Polaris Expedition. I'm not sure if we mentioned that.
It originally had a different name, though.
Really? What was it originally called?
It was originally the Tugboat Periwinkle.
Well, you know what? The Tugboat Periwinkle is not quite a grand enough name, and I'm sure this is the exact argument they had on the Senate floor or wherever they argue. Decide who names these things. So it was like, we're not sending the Tugboat Periwinkle to be the first ship to conquer the pole and plant the American flag.
It would have been really adorable if they did.
The thing about the North Pole is it's very manly, hair on your chest type stuff. You're not going to hear a whole lot of female names this episode.
That's true. And actually, all of them have great mustaches.
They all have excellent mustaches.
Yeah.
And I would make an argument you don't hear a lot of female names because most of the women had more sense than that than to sail off into forbidding climes in the middle of nowhere.
Although I'm the one who said I wanted to go to space, and you're like, no.
I'm not sure if I'd want to go to space, but maybe if I was old and I was like, well, I've got to die somewhere, so either I can hang out in space, and if I blow up or whatever.
But, you know, when you think about when they went, their age is actually fairly old. Like, their life expectancy is not that much past, like, their 60s.
That's true.
So.
But Hall would have only been about 50 at this point, I think.
It's probably not much past being 50. No, it is. It's only the 1800s, yeah.
And these are relatively well-off people, so they're not, you know, they're not dying. They haven't died of scurvy when they're four, so they're probably pretty good.
Yeah, if you reach adulthood, you're normally decent.
Yeah, so I've heard. Despite the crew problems, they actually make fairly great time. And they get all the way up to about 82 degrees north.
That's pretty far north.
It's pretty far north. It's right between Ellesmere Island and Greenland. They stayed at a harbor called Thank God Harbor.
That seems a lot more accommodating than, like, Terror.
It's much nicer than Terror Bay.
Yeah.
And to be fair, the Polaris is a much nicer name than the Terror or the Erebus. They've kind of figured out optics. They matter a bit, you know?
Yeah, I'd much rather get on that than the Terror.
So the Polaris gets there, and there's kind of a few incidents that happen that sort of lead to some problems happening. In case you haven't noticed, these expeditions, they all have a problem. We're not going to tell you about very many successfully, happily completed expeditions.
That would be a boring podcast.
Well, one of them will. Stick around, find out.
Dun, dun, dun.
So there's a few times where Hull is going to go off and sort of do some, like, reconnaissance in Greenland, more or less.
Yeah.
And so he leaves, I believe it's Buddington, with some orders. Here's how to keep the ship while I'm away.
Yeah, and he also tells the engineer how to maintain the ship and make sure that he winds different things.
Yeah, here's how you wind up a chronometer, and
the
engineer's like, okay, thanks, asshole, I know how to do this. He goes off, he comes back, and then a few days later, Charles Francis Hull, he takes a drink of coffee, and what happens?
He immediately gets sick.
How sick?
So he starts complaining of stomach pains. And then he starts vomiting, and then he starts hallucinating. I don't know if it's all in this order, but all of these things start to happen. So he gets really sick. He's incredibly weak. He's not able to go up on deck or anything. And also, he had complained that the coffee was sweet.
Oh.
That's an important
thing.
So
now the coffee was awfully bitter.
So
after about 3 weeks, he actually gets better.
Yeah. And also, he's starting to refuse to be treated by the doctor.
Who was the doctor?
I believe his name is Bessels.
I believe it was the same person that he was telling to wind the chronometer.
Yes, it is. Yeah, it's the exact same person that he was telling to wind.
So he refused to be treated by him.
Yeah.
He gets a bit better.
And he's only being treated right now by the Inuit guide's wife.
All right.
Yeah.
There we go. A woman.
Yeah. There are women on this ship.
And eventually he has another cup of coffee.
Yeah.
And?
Then he dies. I don't know if it was a cup of coffee, but it was...
Okay, the reading I did suggested it was a cup of coffee.
But he started to get treated by Bessels again, too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because he gets convinced to be treated by Bessels after that.
So, yeah, so he gets treated, he drinks something else, and then Charles Francis Hull, the more or less reviled head of this expedition, dies.
Yeah. And this is post, you know, half of his crew threatening to quit, and...
Yeah, so they bury him there, and at this point, you know, they're fairly far north, they decide to turn around, and discipline has just kind of fallen apart on this. They go on.
Well, I feel like discipline had fallen apart, like, well before this. At, like, some point, they'd actually thrown one of the boilers overboard.
Interesting.
Yeah, and I feel like that's probably an important thing to keep on your ship.
Interesting.
Yeah, and I don't know if that was, like, one of those they threw it overboard.
It might have just not been working.
It could have not been working. It could have also been that if I throw this overboard, we'll have to turn back.
Hmm. So at a certain point, there's basically two captains, but one of them is basically drunk all the time.
Yeah, so it's Tyson and Boddington. Or Buddington.
Buddington.
Buddington. Buddington is a beer. It's Tyson and Buddington. Yeah, and Buddington is essentially drunk all the time. There's, like, rumors of him breaking in and stealing all of the alcohol that's supposed to be for sick men.
Yeah.
And him, like, stealing, like, science experiment alcohol.
It was impressive how much alcohol you would bring along on a ship like this.
Yeah, well, I feel like... Well, it was for medical reasons. And also,
you have to keep a sailor nicely half drunk.
Exactly. Otherwise, why are you going to go on this?
Exactly. You get go to the Arctic, but you get basically 3 years of being slightly tipsy every day.
Yeah. All right, so discipline is completely breaking down on the ship. There's essentially no lights out. They're cruising till all hours of the night.
Playing cards,
drinking, singing songs, doing sort of seems like a Disney movie at that point.
Kind of does.
And for some reason, Buddington also issues them firearms.
Okay, I can't see what could possibly go wrong.
Exactly. It seems like a great idea.
I feel like that could be a subtitle for this episode. What could possibly go wrong?
That may be what we call it. And so at this point, the ship actually winds up being down to only, like, they've now downed 3 lifeboats because they wind up, like, carelessly leaving lifeboats out and, like, crushing lifeboats. This will become important later, I promise. And then in 1872, they get stuck on an iceberg.
They get stuck on an iceberg, okay.
Well, and that sort of seems like something that would happen.
Yeah, so the boat's frozen on an iceberg.
Boat is frozen on an iceberg, and so they're stuck there, so they wind up, like, sort of wandering around on the ice. Some of the stuff from the ship gets moved onto the ice. I'm not exactly sure why you would do this, but why not? They may be having to go hunt on the ice or something to go find food. So a bunch of them, the men are on the ice, a bunch of the rescue boats are on the ice, and a bunch of the food are on the ice. And eventually they wind up breaking apart.
Okay, so they're split into 2 groups now. There's a bunch of people on the boat and a bunch of people on the ice.
Exactly. And so...
And this is just kind of like on one particular day. It's not like it's Survivor and they're divided into ice tribe and ship tribe.
No. Okay. They're just one day, this happens to happen. There's a bunch of people on the ice, there's a bunch of people on the boat, and they break apart. And it just so happens that...
What else breaks apart?
Everything.
All right.
Well, at this point, Buddington is on the boat... And Tyson is on the ice. And the boat starts drifting away. The men on the ice are, like, yelling and waving flags, but they don't see anything. Nobody on the ship sees anything.
Of course, yes. We didn't see a thing.
We didn't see our captain. And so they're drifting away. The men on the ice luckily had the Inuit guides with them. And so the Inuit build some igloos on the ice. They're able to hunt for seals and feed everybody on there. And they wind up drifting for, I think it's about 6 months.
All right.
And then they're finally spotted on land. But there was a point where they didn't think they were going to get rescued at all. So they actually, like, broke down one of the rescue boats for firewood, too.
Okay.
And they started, like, carelessly eating all the food. So they're really lucky that they actually did wind up drifting into the sea.
The good luck of it was...
They get spotted by, I think it's a whaler, and like a whaling ship, and...
And the Polaris made it back.
The Polaris winds up making it back as well. I mean, they had a couple of close calls
so
as well.
In conclusion, everyone from this Polaris expedition made it back.
Except for Hall.
Except for the putative leader, Charles Francis Hall, who they buried.
Yeah.
A Christian burial in Greenland.
Yeah.
And eventually... someone went there and found him, and I think it was in 1969 or something like that. They exhumed him quite late. It was like in the 60s or the 50s, and they took a look at his body, which, like you were saying before, like, the bodies on Beachy Island, very well preserved.
Yeah, well, because it's really cold in Greenland.
Exactly.
I learned that in the Mighty Ducks.
And it's very green in Iceland. Actually, it's not. There's no trees at all. Lovely place. Go there.
Yeah.
So they take a look at Hall's body, and the official ruling from the ship's doctor, Bessel, his arch nemesis, or one of many apparently nemeses, was that he died of apoplexy, which was basically what they just called a stroke back then.
Yeah.
It kind of means anytime any of your organs start to blow up and bleed. It's a nasty business.
Yeah, it's essentially like internal bleeding.
Yeah, so, you know, more modern people with their moderner sciences take a look at him, and what do they find?
They find that there is a high concentration of arsenic.
An absurd amount of arsenic is in his body.
Well, and he'd been complaining, saying that he thought somebody was trying to poison him.
So, it's pretty possible he was poisoned, although they never actually said that he was definitely poisoned.
Well, they also said that he might have accidentally poisoned himself, which is a really weird theory.
It is... But it might not be as weird as you think, because it was the 1870s. It was very much a time of snake oil salesmen and quack doctory. So, you know, they would sell these patent cures everywhere that would have tons of arsenic, tons of lead, and, like, the medical kit had things with tons of arsenic in it. It was entirely possible to accidentally poison yourself. If you're going to ask me, I'm probably leaning on the ship full of people who disliked him poisoned him.
Yeah, I'm leaning towards the fact, especially given that he was getting better,
mm-hmm.
and then started going and getting treated by the doctor again.
And, like, or at least the testimonies are very clear that he got sick after drinking a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
It wasn't like he was taking a cure.
No.
There's sort of a very clear poison vector there.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure he was poisoned, and my money's on Bessel's.
Mine too. I mean, we don't want to be too much of a hit job here, but it tends to be where the finger's pointing here.
Although, I mean, I watch a lot of crime dramas, and they tell me that it's too obviously Bessel's.
Oh, so who do you think it could then be?
Well, it would have to be somebody who also didn't like Bessel's, because it would have to be somebody trying to set Bessel's up for the murder.
There were 10 or 12, you know, fairly insignificant and not mentioned in our story Germans. Could have been any of them.
All the ones that decided to quit.
Exactly. Maybe they could have been from somewhere else.
There you go. So it might have been the Germans.
So that is the story of the Polaris expedition. Hall led them, quote-unquote, led them
uh-huh.
fairly far enough. They did reach the farthest verified point north of any, at very least, Europeans.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's possible that native folks had been further north than that. It doesn't seem to be a whole lot of evidence of settlements that high, so
yeah.
They had the record then for farthest north.
And they did a lot better than the Franklin Expedition.
More of them survived, and only their namesake didn't make it, and that was their decision by the sounds of it.
And not eating each other is a pretty... a better way.
Yeah.
Okay, that wraps up part one of Aaron and Adam's episodes on polar exploration. Hopefully listening to that made you feel a little better about the icy winter we've been having here in Vancouver. And I hope you tune into the next episode to find out more. As always, you can email us at thetipsyarchives@gmail.com or find us on Twitter @tipsyarchives. Thanks for listening.